Hello, and welcome to the Clinical Care Options Oncology Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Quill. Today's episode features Dr. Ashley Leek Bryant, Associate Professor at the School of Nursing at the University of North Carolina Lineberger Comprehensive Cancer Center. She will be discussing treatment strategies for fit patients with AML without targetable mutations. This episode is part of a larger educational program titled MedTalk 2021, Nurses Discuss Current and Emerging Management Strategies in AML. For more information on Dr. Bryant, along with a link to the complete program, including a downloadable PDF covering the topics discussed in this podcast, please visit the show notes for this episode. Now let's get started and hear what Dr. Bryant has to say.
So I'll talk about induction and maintenance therapy for younger patients with AML without targetable mutations. So AML treatment goals. So really the focus is on people who are the younger adults. Without targetable mutations, we're going to induce readmission. That's our goal. They're going to have consolidation therapy and then an allo transplant with a goal to cure. We also know with older adults, our goal is to determine eligibility for intensive therapy and for transplant. Treat as aggressively as feasible, so as much as the body will allow, and continue therapy as long as feasible, as well as with the goal of care for that patient, and potentially have maintenance therapy with oral azacitidine. The ongoing discussions we must have with patients without targetable mutations goes back to what we discussed earlier. What's the focus? Is it about the maintenance of their counts or improving their counts? Do they want to become transfusion independent? How do we minimize and manage those really bothersome toxicities and side effects of the treatment? We know quality of life is so important, and so how do we ensure that their well-being is at the highest level? How do we maintain and restore function? And then do we stabilize the disease versus cure the disease? And this is where ongoing communication is critically important in each encounter that we have with patients. So what are the therapeutic options? Here we're going to focus on those who are eligible for intensive therapy. So the AML treatment for a fit younger adult, what's the plan? Our goal is to remove as many leukemia cells as possible through treatment. And we mostly are giving this to patients who are less than 6 years of age, but we know some older adults who are really fit, who take good care of themselves, maybe with less comorbidities and great social support, may have similar or slightly less intensive treatment. The most common induction treatment that's been around for years has been 7+3. So that's 7 days of cytarabine plus 3 days of the anthracycline, which is adonarubicin or idarubicin. If they have a FLT3 mutation, we're going to add midostaurin. If it's a CD33 positive, we're going to add gemtuzumab, ozogamicin. But there's also other options, such as liposomal cytarabine, daunorubicin, that may be indicated for some types of AML. So the younger fit patient has more options, I would say, but it really depends on if they have FLT3 mutations or CD33 positive. Post-induction consolidation therapy. Typically, most people receive a bone marrow biopsy around day 14. Based on that bone marrow biopsy, if there's been a sufficient reduction in which we consider they're in remission with less than 5% blast, they're going to receive consolidation with high-dose ARC or some other type of cytarabine regimen, followed by an allogeneic stem cell transplant. If reduction produces insufficient cytoreduction, they may need to continue with some type of reinduction of therapy. So the indication for gemtuzumab, ozogamicin, is they have to have CD33 positive and or treatment of relapsed or refractory in adults or pediatric patients who are 2 years and older. We know the mechanism of action comprises a CD33 antibody linked to the cytotoxic agent. Some survival benefits when added to induction therapy for core binding factor AML. So what's the dosing and safety for gemtuzumab, ozogamicin? So the dose in someone with CD33, single agent, which we say includes induction cycle 1, 6 milligrams per meter squared, or 3 milligrams per meter squared day 8, continuous up to 8 cycles, or combination therapy. For relapse refractory, it's a single agent only, just days 1, 4, and 7 over one course. And those are 3 milligrams per meter squared. Most frequently, the grade 3 adverse events in patients with newly diagnosed AML include infection, febrile neutropenia, fatigue, liver toxicity, and even cardiac toxicity. But I would say infection and febrile neutropenia are the most common. There's also the risk of sinusoidal obstruction syndrome, SOS, which significantly is less with revised dosing, but still a black box warning. We also have another trial here, the QUASAR AML-001 oral azacitidine in AML, which was a phase 3 randomized double-blinded placebo-controlled trial. You can see here, these were people who were 55 or older with AML, with intermediate or poor risk cytogenetics. You had to have an ECOG performance status of less than 3, and there were 472 patients that were randomized to either oral azacitidine or placebo. The response assessments was every 3 weeks, and then this continued until death, withdrawal of consent, or study end or loss of follow-up. And so if the person had a complete remission, you would continue treatment. If they had 5 to 15% blast, optional treatment escalation. If they had greater than 15% bone marrow blast, discontinue the treatment. Primary endpoint was overall survival, with the key secondary endpoint being RFS. So what did they find in this trial? In this trial, they found a p-value that was significant. Oral azacitidine is 24.7 and then 14.8, so a difference of 9.9 months. So oral azacitidine has a longer survival. So some of the safety concerns here were that most of them had GI or gastrointestinal adverse effects during the first 2 cycles of treatment. Those included nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea, and even constipation. We had no treatment-related deaths. Here we have the hematological adverse events, which we talked about, which is really the myelosuppression, fatigue, and others. GI was probably the most common concerns of oral azacitidine, followed by hematological side effects. We also wanted to just talk about managing the SOS, the sinusoidal obstructive syndrome, which is also known as VOD, veno-occlusive disease, which can be potentially fatal. It can occur after a transplant or more rarely, even after chemotherapy. We know that cytotoxic agents can cause damage to the sinus endothelial cells, leading to progressive narrowing of that lumen and obstructs overflow, which then causes portal hypertension. Patients usually present with increased bilirubin levels, weight gain, ascites, and ultimately they go into multi-organ failure. And we have seen patients with this. If this happens, gemtuzumab, ozogamicin should be discontinued. And so it's important to critically monitor this. And this is where the interdisciplinary team and where our nursing assistants and nurses and medical assistants really are involved. So it's important to monitor the weight daily at the same time each day, monitor liver function tests before and after each dose of medication, monitor blood counts because we know it can cause cytopenias. Difibrotide has shown efficacy in patients as prophylactic before receiving gemtuzumab, ozogamicin, and as treatment after exposure with or without transplant. In this trial, median overall survival has improved. When you add gemtuzumab, ozogamicin with 7+3, overall survival is greater. But in MRC AML16 is untreated older adults, low-dose ARC plus gemtuzumab, ozogamicin at 5 milligrams per meter squared, and improve complete response rate, but there's no improvement in overall survival rate. There was a meta-analysis of 5 large randomized controlled trials with over 3,000 patients. That meta-analysis, it showed no improvement in complete response rate. However, there was improvement in overall survival rate and favorable risk and intermediate risk cytogenetics, with best response in patients with favorable risk. So what are some of the common adverse effects? So as we mentioned before, myelosuppression, which is common with any blood cancer, but particularly with AML, the risk of fever and infection, febrile neutropenia, bleeding, fatigue, and even infertility because the focus of this session is about those younger adults. And so it's important for us to think about how treatment can impact fertility of patients. So neutropenia, important to provide education related to signs and symptoms of infection. And so it's important to make sure that our patients and their families have a thermometer at home and they're closely monitoring for any fevers or signs of infection. They need to know when to call the office and when to go to the emergency room. They also need to have potentially some prophylactic antimicrobial at the house. It's important for them to make sure we're using good hand washing hygiene and avoiding anyone that's sick and avoiding large crowds. We know that growth factors may be a benefit to these patients as well. Bleeding is something that we know will happen. And so we really need to talk about signs and symptoms of bleeding and identifying when a transfusion may be indicated. So when your hematocrit or hemoglobin gets to a certain level, that's when we need to transfuse you, either 1 or 2 units of blood. But also know that there's a potential for there to be a transfusion reaction and a development of antibodies with the more red blood cells that they receive. We know that fatigue is the most commonly reported symptom in patients with anemia. And oftentimes our patients who come into the clinic, they are aware that their blood levels are low and they have already prepped themselves to know they're going to get a transfusion for that day. And for thrombocytopenia, you want to provide education related to lifestyle changes, the no vigorous activities, sports, no picking the nose, and to really let us know when bleeding starts, particularly for women on their menstrual cycle. Our goal is to try to minimize that bleeding. Fever risk. So here we talked about anything above 100.4 Fahrenheit to call the office immediately and go to the emergency room. It's important to recognize any signs of infection early on, so any redness or pus or drainage, and really good hand hygiene. Another common focus, as we've said, fatigue. We know that oftentimes these patients are exhausted. They may even be coming back into the clinic or into the hospital with some assistive device because they're so worn out. So encouraging some light exercise or physical activity, such as walking, encouraging them to listen to their bodies and to cluster care and not to overdo it. And there are some excellent guidelines that are out there for cancer-related fatigue that recommend screening for fatigue and management strategies. We would be remiss if we didn't talk about infertility, particularly with this younger population, and that most treatments for AML may cause infertility. So it's particularly important to have those discussions really early on before treatment starts. We know that leukemia drugs can harm a developing baby, so patients should use contraception. For women, chemotherapy stops ovary function and may result in menopausal symptoms requiring hormone replacement therapy. It's important to ensure that if they're using chemotherapy and or radiation therapy, that those discussions are had beforehand. For men, we know that chemotherapy can lower sperm count and can reduce the risk of sperm production. We know that radiotherapy can do that as well. It's really important that if you're uncomfortable having those discussions, that you would have someone in your clinic, in your hospital, in your community practice to really discuss this with the patient. It's important for us to make sure that that's a part of our assessments. So what's the summary? It's important to know that there are limited treatment options for younger patients with AML without any targetable mutations. We have to manage their treatment-related adverse events and have discussions about what's important to them. So is their goal for them to be able to go to their sons or daughters or niece or nephew's graduation, to see a baby being born? That's where it's important as a team for us to get to what the goals of care is for that patient to ensure that their needs are being met, particularly with limited treatment options.
Thank you very much, Dr. Bryant, and thanks to you, the listeners, for joining us. As a reminder, to view the full program, MedTalk 2021, Nurses Discuss Current and Emerging Management Strategies in AML, and to download the associated PDF from the Clinical Care Options website, please click on the link in the show notes. As always, thanks for listening.